Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Queer Quadrant, a podcast where we, two bisexual filmmakers, examine cinema in all its cultural contexts and explore why your favorite four-quadrant blockbuster is maybe not as straight as you think it is.
You know, when I was graduating college, I also said I just went gay all of a sudden, and it was that exact same experience that Cary Grant had in this movie. Like, we both suddenly became gay. It just happens like that, you know?
This really is a movie about how one man's ad lib set off a whole chain of rumors for years.
You know the domino meme or whatever, where it's like this thing happens and then it's a larger thing.
Cary Grant ad lib.
Cary Grant riffs.
Yes.
And then it's like everyone thinks Cary Grant is the world's most gay man alive.
We'll get into it. I don't want to waste any time. Hi, I'm Brooke Solomon.
Jordan Gustafson. We should be talking faster. We got to be moving.
We love talking about cinema. We love talking about being queer. We love talking about queer cinema. Here we are talking about it on mic. And today we are discussing, we also have to like interrupt each other like every line. Today we are talking about the 1938 film Bringing Up Baby, a misunderstood
David.
Classic in its time. David.
David.
I can't let it become a Schitt's Creek impression. And we are joined by the one and only Mia Livacino, West Coast editor of Letterboxd and co-host of their awards podcast, Best in Show. Welcome back.
Woo! Hello, hello, hello. I am so ready to talk Bringing Up Baby. I am a Cary Grant scholar. I am ready for this. Thank you for having me.
Ooh, thank you so much for being here.
Ooh, ooh, ooh.
We decided,
as he famously does.
Yes, he does.
We're bringing it back. So if you're listening to this, you have the opportunity to jump on a new trend right away.
The ooh-ooh trend.
The ooh-ooh trend. We have been very lucky to have some Cary Grant scholars on for our Cary Grant episodes, of which I believe this is number three.
So many. No. Okay, wait. So
Arsenic and Old Lace.
Arsenic and Old Lace. The Awful Truth.
Awful Truth. And this.
Did we not do one other? I feel like we've done another Grant.
I don't think so.
Have you done one of his that's really gay? You. My Favorite Wife is pretty gay.
Well, that's also the thing. Yes.
We, with two huge Grant and one Grant Hepburn joint that are on our list are My Favorite Wife and Sylvia Scarlett.
Yes. And I also wager we can put the Philadelphia Story on there.
Yes, there is a way to do this. It's a love triangle in a way, and it's kind of bi in that
and
way.
Jimmy Stewart is kind of more like, you know.
But My Favorite Wife is like honestly the better, the queer wise, the better version of the Philadelphia Story because it's
like, definitely more explicitly.
It's more explicitly about the in between. I do love the Philadelphia Story, and I love
perfect movie.
I don't who's the actress, but who Jimmy Stewart ends up with
his side,
like reporter assistant.
Yeah,
huge fan of her.
She's so
huge fan.
I always love when a reporter finds love.
Yes,
you know, because it never happens. Actually, if you think about it, hard hitting reporters never find love.
No, tell me about it.
Especially not in the movies.
In cinema. Okay, so I'm going to get this out of the way. Rewatching this, I think this is the tricky thing about our podcast is we've talked about Cary Grant before. I'm very excited to talk about Cary Grant. We've talked about Katharine Hepburn, but have we explicitly covered a Katharine Hepburn joint? And I don't think we have.
No, we have not.
Thank
this is
God.
A very big day for me personally.
For me personally. Okay.
I fucking love Katharine Hepburn.
When
I
say her pantsuits.
The gender envy that I have of Katharine Hepburn in this movie. Like, to be a fast-talking New York pantsuit-wearing broad is like the dream. That's all I want to be in my life.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I have regular envy of her. She is, especially, oh, my God. Remember when Kate Blanchett played her in The Aviator?
Of course. Didn't she get nommed?
She
won.
Yes, she won.
I was like,
she won and she deserved.
She did. She did. Mm-hmm. She was like, I know how to do a fast-talking voice and you're going to love it, buddy. And everyone was like, we do.
Everyone that has ever been from Connecticut wishes that they were Katharine Hepburn. She just is the prototypical, cool, waspy, upper class, pearls and pantsuits, take no shit, woman. I love her.
She's badass.
She's badass. So cool. She's probably my favorite, like, classic movie star.
Your favorite old Hollywood star?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, her and, well, I mean, Redford, I feel like, is, like, a different...
different generation. A different
age.
Yeah.
Than, like, classic. But, like, classic Hepburn.
She's fucking... She's got it. She has it.
Day, all night, in every room.
Oh my goodness, Brooke, how lewd. The Haze
Code. That doesn't pass the Haze Code. Oh, yeah, we're both doing Haze Code joke.
Literally, yeah, like no sex jokes on the pod. Yeah. No talking about queerness on the pod.
Oh my God, I was just reading the rules of, I was refamiliarizing myself with the Haze Code recently. And I love
you were like,
that
we gotta
rules,
bring it back.
Yeah, gotta bring it back. We love the Haze Code. No. One of the rules was like, no sex perversion. It's like, what does that even...
Gay, basically.
I know that means gay, but it's like, that's a crazy way to phrase it.
A very crazy way to phrase it. Coming out against the Haze Code.
That is very brave to take that stand in 2024.
I know.
Thank you.
The craziest thing is that for all the talk about, like, you know, people are being so sex averse about media right now, we're basically going back to the Haze Code. There is actually a lot of weird social media censorship that I think has brought innuendo back in a bigger way than it was for a very long time. And it's not all, I mean, some of the stuff is insane, like people saying unalived for died,
boo,
or corn. People just like don't talk about corn anymore.
Corn is corn.
Let's take a stance against this.
But yeah, something that I think is interesting is like what I said earlier, like day, night, right, every room. Or people will comment on like a video of two guys and be like, Paris is beautiful this time of year.
It's pretty funny. I think there are parts
to
like
give
that.
It a minute. And so I think that I'm very anti media censorship,
of course.
I think that it's interesting how media censorship, as in things just like if you post certain things on Twitter or on TikTok, your search results get limited. People have become creative in an interesting way. And sometimes it's quite funny in the way that people were always like putting these insane loopholes in the Haze Code.
Yeah. Well, I think what you're saying is like, it's what works about innuendo is that it like requires a half step of like thinking.
You got to think about
it. And like, it's fun when you have like a dialogue where you're like, wait, there's a little meaning to this. That's what, like, why all these screwballs comedies work is because they're all like every fucking line you're breaking down in your brain. You're like, what is the joke being made here? Mm-hmm. And like, this movie is wall to wall innuendo.
Yes. And sometimes it goes even, I was like writing in my notes, sometimes it goes even further, like when her dress rips.
Yes.
And you see her underwear a little
huge
bit. I was
extremely risque.
I was
almost
scandalized.
He smacks her butt with the hat.
Yeah, with
he
the
does
hat. I was like, I was just thinking like I would have freaked out if I had seen this in 1938. Like I would be losing
in
my
the
mind.
Theater just hooting and hollering.
Yeah, for yeah. real. Oh my God. And his robe, we'll get into the I mean, know the, we're gonna get that, into that. I don't want to skip ahead.
Yeah, robe deserves 15 minutes.
Yeah, that's like we can go long on that.
Like from the beginning, they're already like getting innuendo. Like I wrote, my first note is Alice. I think this one might be belong in the tail. Nonsense! You tried it in the tail yesterday, and they just keep moving.
Oh, tried it in the tail. Oh my God!
They're a little dirty. They're a little naughty.
Yeah, it's one of the best things about screwball comedies, and the other Cary Grant movies that we've talked about have again been in that like screwball comedy zone. That's his bread and butter, baby. Yeah. But like something that I will always find so endearing and so watchable and rewatchable and re-rewatchable is the wit and the talent that goes into actually writing these things, and performing them. But like it's comedy that's operating on a whole other level.
Yes,
because he's a vaudevillian king.
Yes.
Came up through vaudeville, as we know.
That face, so expressive. The body, his pratfalls.
His ability
movie,
to pratfall.
Oh, no one falls like Cary Grant falls.
No, he is. I love the way that he pratfalls. I have been like, okay, I've edited a fan cam in my head. I haven't made it. I haven't made it in real life yet.
Yeah, yeah.
But I need a fan cam of him like falling down to the song "Boss Bitch."
Yes.
You know that's where she's
yes,
like,
"I'm a bitch. I'm a boss.
Stumbling around in my high heel shoes. I'm clumsy. Yeah. Made friends with the floor." that part I always think about Cary Grant when I hear that
that's
line.
So funny.
I'm clumsy. Made friends with the floor. Yeah. So
okay, if we don't do this for like social media on this app, I have like disappointed myself.
Do you know how to make it? Do you know how to make a fan cam edit, Jordan?
I mean, my entire like childhood was basically cutting together like trailers.
So which if
is
you
possibly fan cams.
Yeah, we brought it back. If you don't, I was going to say, I will learn. I will take.
Somebody needs to do something.
Video editing 101 just to do a fan cam.
Just to do a fan cam.
Of Cary Grant falling down.
Yeah. I'm Jordan, I'm in the same boat as you. YouTube, like, compilations, which are basically just full-length fan cams. Where
it's
you
like
have
a
three-minute
fan cam.
It's a whole song instead of just a little bit of the song. Yeah. This is my life.
God.
We can make it happen. We've successfully found very niche fan cams.
They're out there.
They're out there.
Everything has a fan cams, to make a cam.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I found specifically a Li Shang bisexual legend fan cam for Mulan, like
that's
two,
a raise
what,
the
3 years ago.
I mean,
were you gonna say Mia?
Probably one of our hottest animated characters. I'll say it. I'll go
best.
On the record and say it.
Oh, there are so many. I could spend the whole time talking about hot animated characters, but that's not what we're here for.
Everyone in this movie's hot is ultimately the thing, though. Like, the chin. See, like,
ugh.
I'm not usually like a big like split chin person, but Cary Grant's
a cleft chin.
No chin has ever cleft that hard. Like that, you know, like
chin.
That thing was working out. He was doing reps on that thing. How is it that clefted?
He's so good looking.
It's crazy.
And his hair. Ugh. I'm so jealous of his hair. Like the perfect coif, his little curl.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God. Oh
but
my God.
Hepburn,
and his cute little glasses.
The glasses do wonders. When she says to him and she's like, he's trying to get her to be serious. He's like, can you please like concentrate for one moment? Like we need to talk. And she's like, you're so good looking without your glasses off or on.
Yes.
Oh.
Yes.
But David, I know it's like
you are.
But David, but David.
The way that there was a Letterboxd review, which I think is 100% true, that there's nothing more like there's nothing better than flirting where you're just yelling at each other, saying each other's names constantly. And that's this entire movie where it's David, Susan, David, Susan, David, Susan. But it's so romantic.
It is. Oh my God. And I also just rewatched What's Up, Doc? Have you all seen
this?
Yes.
Masterpiece.
Oh my God. Masterpiece. Yeah, I just saw that like in a movie theater on film with like a
that's
big
beautiful.
Huge crowd and like just so much laughter, and I was just thinking about how indebted it is to Bringing Up Baby specifically.
Oh, yeah.
Like it totally cribs it in a respectful, you know, it's obviously an homage. I'm not saying he ripped it off, but like the whole, you know, he's like a scientist, like a dorky scientist straight man guy, and there's this wacky broad who's ruining his life at the fancy event.
Barbara Streisand taking a role and bodying it. Just absolutely annihilating.
Yes. Oh my God, yes.
I haven't seen it in like 2 years. A movie I've seen a lot though, but isn't there an entire dress ripping that's like basically in this movie? Okay, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, yes. Like there was truly so much that they took in a very respectful way.
Of course.
And I'm glad they did, because just it's just like nobody is doing it like this anymore.
No, we don't have screwball comedies. I mean, like, of course it was specifically because of like that time period and what they were going through, like culturally as a United States and world. But like, I do think there is genuinely something so timeless about them. And it is frustrating that we as a culture don't make screwball comedies anymore, because they're best thing imaginable.
And they're cheap. They're cheap as hell. I mean, obviously these are being made with like giant movie stars, but it feels like rom-coms are, you know, I mean, hey, they're on the up and up again, which... It bodes very well.
Yes.
Bodes very, very well. Yes. But I feel like the screwball element just kind of got folded into comedy in general, where there's terrible examples and there's good examples, but like we don't have enough distinction in like comedy as a genre anymore.
Yes.
To like even consider screwball comedy its own sort of thing.
Hey, the good news is that the country's getting way worse, and that always bodes well for screwball comedies.
It does.
Yeah, the screwball comedy arose after like the Great Depression, and people needed some major cheering up. Mm-hmm. And then also, you know, like wartime as well, they needed to be cheered up by Cary Grant falling down. So yeah, the worse the country gets, the more likely that we'll get a screwball rom-connaissance. And yeah, I'm mm-hmm. Mr. Brightside.
So hang in there, guys.
That's actually good. I think we should make the country worse. I think that's a good thing that we should do. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We should campaign on that.
Mm-hmm. Fully mm-hmm. in favor of that. Yeah.
Well,
I think I think Hawks talked about it in like reading reviews and in general, but like the move, like I feel like what Brooke, like what you were talking about, where comedies have like screwballish elements, like with pratfalls or things like that. But the screwballness, I feel like, got sequestered into more like Coen brother-y things or things like that, where it's like you have a screwy character, like everyone is screwy, and then there's like your one character or two characters maybe who are like normal. But in terms of like bigger studios, like screwball comedies are completely,
I mean, we're having trouble just getting romantic comedies made. Mm-hmm. So but I mean, something like Any Bun But You cleaning up pretty damn well. No, I know. I knew it. I said it, and then I was like,
"That's awesome! But, I love that."
It
could bode well.
It could.
What an average movie, but could bode well.
Yes, but could bode well. I admittedly did not see that, which goes kind of against my, you know, like it's like I like to support rom-coms in the theaters because they need to be supported so that we can get more of them. And I admittedly did not see it. I am admittedly not doing my part. Please hold me accountable for that.
I was gonna say, you have to leave the podcast now, actually. I'm so sorry.
I know. And I deserve that. Like, this is my public apology. I really like, I'm listening and learning. I really am listening and learning. So
brave of you to come on and say that.
Thank you.
I also feel like screwball comedies got folded into raunchy comedies. Like, there's a world in which something like No Hard Feelings is like, oh,
a little screwier.
Yes. I think it got, now that we can quote unquote say everything, I think a lot of the physical comedy and like fast paced and innuendo elements of screwball comedies just got folded into like the more R-rated stuff.
Yeah.
Bring
this
it back.
Is making me miss Down with Love.
I know.
Which is kind of screwball comedy. Yeah.
It kind of is.
It's the modern.
Yeah. It's a
version. But that was like 20 years ago. Like, is there another one since then? Like that?
It's all Coen brothers, basically.
I swear to God, we did this either on the Down with Love episode or the Awful Truth episode, where I was like, what is classified as a screwball comedy, and it's basically horror movie or Coen brother movies. Coen brother movie is something like fucking Anchorman, which is not
that
even
doesn't count.
Close
not
to a screwball comedy.
No.
Mistress America is a screwball comedy. That's
super
one.
Indie stuff. Yeah. Yeah.
Mistress America. Yes.
Mistress America is amazing, but like I would not classify that as a mainstream film.
No, not
mainstream. And also, there's no romance necessarily. I mean, it's like it's subversive romance. You know, it's about a relationship between these two women, but not a romantic relationship.
Right.
Yeah, it's not a screwball rom-com.
Studios, if you're listening, hire me. I'm available to write screwball comedies. I will do it for free, actually. So
don't undersell yourself.
I will undersell myself right now. But I do think it's like rewatching this, I think it's like the archetypes, while they are still used, and obviously like screwball comedies are using big, broader archetypes, like they aren't necessarily things that like we're doing a lot now, where it's like this like, you know, kind of like submissive man who's kind of nerdy, willing to like fall on the ground a lot. And then you have like the outspoken, quote unquote, like untamed woman. And it feels like the untamed woman got kind of transferred into like a girl, like she got girl bossified. And I feel like it's more like I'm a professional thing like that now versus like a Barbra Streisand and What's Up Doc, you know?
I think it became Manic Pixie Dream Girl for a little bit. And now it is sort of girl boss professional. But like the thing about the girl boss professional type is that they're usually very, very type A, which goes against your classic screwball comedy dynamic where the man is the uptight one.
Right.
And it's like this loose, wild, like chaotic woman who completely destroys his life
for better.
For better.
For the better. Yes. No, I miss my wacky women. I don't identify with the type A women. Like, all love to them because we need them very badly to do the jobs that I don't want to do. But yeah, I can't identify with those ones as much as I can with like the freewheeling, with the freewheeling freaks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Freaky girls.
Watching this, my big takeaway was like, I would be so curious, and I mean, like, obviously this is just because I'm queer, but I love the idea of, like, a queer screwball, because there is then a way, I think, in which you can use these tropes that have been established in the type, but you can break it with the gender binary or what have you, because the ultimate point of a screwball comedy and what 90% of them are actually doing is upending the gender and, like, gender heteronormative dynamic. Binary. Like, that they're breaking it constantly. That's the whole point. It's what's screwy about it is, like, whoa, it's a little crazy from what we see in normal society.
And Bringing Up Baby is such a perfect example of it because of, like, it's upending gender roles on so many levels.
Yeah.
I think the fact that Susan is the one with all the money. Susan is the one with the influence. Cary Grant is constantly chasing people around trying to get them to talk to him. And she's the one that can swoop in and get him the respect he deserves. The fact that she's constantly interrupting him and he can't get a word in edgewise, and that she does not think twice about doing things like borrowing a car. Like, she takes up space in a very traditionally masculine way, to absolutely disastrous results. But I love that Cary Grant is also like, well, I couldn't take up that sort of space if I tried. I'm not competing against her for it. I very much do not want to be involved in any of these shenanigans.
God,
and he's so tall. He's so tall, and he's like, I'm not going to take up any space. And she's so small, and she's like, I'm going to take up all this space.
She's so tiny. She's That's like, what's important. Such a firecracker. I love it.
The way she walks, too, like, she has a verve to her.
Yes, and I think that, you know, the reason that Bringing Up Baby is, I think, considered the absolute top tier, even though it was kind of infamously a box office disappointment.
Morons.
Yeah, that's humiliating for the audiences of 1938. They should be embarrassed.
They didn't understand.
They didn't understand.
They didn't understand it. Is that Katharine Hepburn is so, like, her character never learns her lesson, never repents, is never tamed by a man, never breaks down, is never sort of like given this weepy, oh my goodness, I really did love you this whole time sort of thing. She's so strong in like her characterization and never wavers. And it's pretty incredible to see. I forgot that just like, I don't know. Like, I feel like if I had watched this when I was 13 or 14, I would have been like, I would like to be that woman.
100%. Yeah. Because she's always just taking and doing without asking, which is just so fun to see. Like, everything with the golf, where he's like, is there anything that doesn't belong to you? She's driving his car. Like, when she, like, blatantly lies to the cops constantly, where it's like, oh, no, that's not my car. It's this car, obviously. And then the whole fucking shenanigans, like, her whole charade in the police station where she adopts this, like, I'm a tough dame.
Where they become gangsters.
Right. It's incredible. And she just rolls with it. And you're like, you are a disaster, but it's working. And I mean, like, ultimately, that's what, like, the whole ending literally is about, is, like, the two of them together are, like, perfect for each other. And, like, the world destroys around them. Like, she breaks the whole fucking dinosaur thing, but it works. Like, she hasn't changed.
Not the Brontosaurus.
Not my, what's the clavicle called? Oh, God, I wrote down.
Oh, it's so crucial.
My intercostal
clavicle.
That feeling when you lose your intercostal clavicle.
Before we get into the meat of the movie, I want to talk about Katharine Hepburn, because we have talked since we spoke about Cary Grant, past and future guest, the wonderful David Canfield wrote a great article for Vanity Fair that was like chronicled the timeline between Cary Grant and Randolph Scott's possibly romantic relationship, and goes so in depth, like looks at research from a huge amount of sources, and I think is like obviously an incredible piece. It's so tender. It's so respectful. respectful while still really conveying like an incredible amount of romanticism and like connection between them.
Yeah.
As
oh yeah,
partners.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Obviously, yes. Like, who, you know, we don't ever want to like cast aspersions or whatever, but like their relationship is so deeply romantic. Like, well, whichever way you cut it.
Yeah. That's why I was so impressed by David's article. I mean, so when we talked about The Awful Truth, he was like, well, I'm actually writing something right now that I can't talk about. And it was the piece. He was like, I don't know when it is coming out because it has tested, like, go through a lot of approvals. But like, I think it is like, if I'm remembering correctly, is like one of the definitive pieces on their relationship through a contemporary lens, because everything has been so sort of like muddled and like hearsay and hush hush. And it's like a pretty definitive, like, hey, in so far as much as we can say what these men meant to each other, here it is.
Right.
Like, we can definitely say that they loved each other, and you can extrapolate from that what you want. But I loved that it was like a piece that was so focused on their relationship, because so much of their personal life was eventually like sensationalized. When it's like we forget that like these two men very clearly and like publicly loved each other, and again you can decide how you want to, you know, categorize that.
And they took hot roommate photo shoots together, you know.
I mean, I'll never, those photos are my Roman Empire, that's probably a dated reference by the time this comes out, but I think about those photos all the time.
No, I have that article, like that was in a tab, like ready to go for this podcast recording, because I remember like where I was when this article dropped. I remember it dropping and me immediately texting it to like so many people being like, the Cary Grant Reynolds Scott love article dropped, week blah, 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 and like freaking out and like spending the whole morning like reading it and like luxuriating in it, because I had wanted a story like this for so long. And it was just, as you were saying, it was just really difficult to like pin it down because of all the hearsay and muddledness. So yes, I also I loved this. It's really so sweet, tender. Article.
It's really
a very
great.
Tender article.
It's very tender. It's very, I think obviously like David was the right person for the job, but it really impressed me. We'll definitely link it. But I bring that up one because it's very relevant to our conversation. And honestly, it's the most definitive thing that we've been able to like reference when we're talking about Cary Grant's personal life and like whether or not.
Well, I knew him.
Identify him.
Yeah, that's true. I remember.
I personally talked to him.
Yeah.
And he said, bitch, I was gay.
Yeah, I went to his grave and we had a little like spiritual moment.
But so it's nice that we can reference that now. But I think that looking at paired with someone like Katharine Hepburn, who was notoriously very, very like, I feel like press shy is not the right word. Press averse.
Averse, for sure. Averse.
She was like,
she
please
was
do
like,
not.
Fuck off.
Me. But I feel like something that is very lasting about her personal legacy, other than all the incredible, you know,
slaying the house down boots performances.
Yes, exactly. Like her personal life outside of her screen presence, of the what sort of like cut through the press aversion was like, girl liked women. And I,
she was wearing like, pants. That's
she was
gay.
Wearing pants.
It's gay to wear
huge.
Pants at that time period.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's that.
That's the definitive answer, actually. Everyone, wrap it up.
Is it the Barbara Walters interview? Is that who she's talking to? Where
Maybe.
She's like, now, Miss Hepburn, do you own a skirt? And she's like, I do. I'll wear it to your funeral.
Gagged. Gagged. That's so
it's
good.
Fucking,
she is so crunchy.
She's
love her.
So sharp. It's amazing. She's so sharp. Oh, my God.
Yeah. So until there's an incredible tell-all article or possibly book about Katharine Hepburn, here is what I want to say. Rumors have existed since the 1930s that she was bisexual, was a lesbian, was a sapphic in some way, shape, or form. She did not seem to care about these rumors. She would frequently joke about them. And in a 2017 documentary, a columnist, like a gossip columnist, Mary Elizabeth Smith, known as Liz Smith colloquially, who was a close friend of Hepburn, attested that she was queer.
Cool. Hell yeah.
Some way.
Another one. We got one.
We got one. Added to the list.
I feel like I have always known that. That's like, I was always familiar with like that aspect Gaydar, of Katharine Hepburn. Yeah. I think honestly though, like Mia, to your point, like fucking mostly because of the pants. It was a huge deal that she wore pants for 7 years.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, because she was also like, this is the best look that will ever be invented. So yeah, I'm just going to rock it.
I mean, she's so hot. She's so
it's crazy.
Oh, I love her.
No one knows how to like.
Yeah,
to wear,
exactly.
Yeah, bonk bonk. We're all going.
This is a horny
jail.
Episode. I'm not afraid to say.
Well, all screwball comedies are horny. Like really horny. This movie is just like, I wanna. Like she's literally like, let me fuck, and he's like, I can't.
He's so I flustered,
can't. Right? Because he has that so damn great. Fiance, Alice,
fucking
or whatever.
Boring.
It's like, oh my god! Which is also what's happening in What's Up, Doc? He has that boring ass fiance.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Exactly.
That feeling when you have boring ass fiance.
Fiance. Ugh.
Who just shows up for two scenes, has glasses on, and a stick up her ass.
Literally, she's like man. She's basically like my no for her was like she's like the masculine. Coded essentially in this where she is like the man in the relationship
in
where she's
the relationship.
Like, oh, and I'm only in this for business. I am XYZ, you know, or you could read that as like, if you wanted to, like she could be queer and just totally not into the relationship as well.
Yes. I think that, but what I think what supports kind of the very, like she wears the pants metaphorically in the relationship, is that she leaves Cary Grant because essentially he fraternized with another woman.
Yeah.
And she, you know, even though they haven't kissed or anything or done at all anything untoward except wear each other's dressing gowns, she's like, no, you were close with another woman and that is simply not acceptable. I'm leaving you. It's very much like your honor is no longer intact. And so I will be leaving you.
She did read him for filth for that though, because if I spent that much time with Katharine Hepburn, I also would have fallen in love with her. So like, I get it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
She was right. Mm-hmm. She was right. It is interesting. We're talking about stars. For all of the Jimmy Stewart love that I have and him being arguably my number one, we still have not covered a Jimmy Stewart vehicle, which is so interesting.
Well, if he would act in more screwball comedies.
Jimmy, get a little
more
gayer.
Screwball comedies. If he did do more gay stuff, like he doesn't do a ton of gay stuff.
You
are lying though, Jordan. We have covered a Jimmy Stewart movie.
We did? Oh God, what did we cover?
I'll give you two guesses.
Well, I'm pulling it up now, so
no, we rope, dude.
Rope. Right.
That is one of the all-time gay movies.
Of course, how could I forget? Ever.
Yeah, that is. Oh my god.
Whatever. Mm-hmm. Doesn't count. I wasn't. I was thinking like silly Jimmy Stewart, you know, where he's like, oh man.
Well, I know that you were like, oh, this is kind of a bummer of a Jimmy Stewart movie to cover because he's pretty serious in it, but he also like he doesn't do that many screwball comedies.
I have it up right here, so it's okay. Philadelphia Story is his screwiest. Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, no. Harvey is kind of, that's a comedy though.
You can't take it with you. You can't take it with you is a little screwy.
Mm-hmm.
He's
a pretty serious actor.
Mary.
And it's so funny because in Philadelphia Story, I always think of Cary Grant as kind of like the serious one and Jimmy Stewart is the fun one.
He is in that one.
Because he gets drunk. Jimmy Stewart gets drunk in that one.
Angles, brother.
Yeah.
Wait, so Mia, you came in and you were like, I love Cary Grant. What is your relationship? When did this start? When did you first see Bringing Up Baby? When did you bring up Baby?
When did I bring up that little baby? Let's see. Do you mind if I pull up my Letterboxd diary?
Little bit.
Okay, here I go. Okay, diary. Bringing up baby. Click. Click. I'm clicking. Okay. It looks like I watched it for the first time on August 1st, 2019.
Slay. Wow, yes. So young, so innocent. The world had not ended.
Truly, no, for real, like we pre-plague, I had watched this film not knowing what was going to happen. And I feel like I came a little bit later to Cary Grant, like it didn't happen until college for me because I didn't grow up watching his films. Yeah, and then I went to double majored in journalism and film, and in film class, like, I started learning about Cary Grant, and I was like, he's one of the hottest guys I've ever seen in my life.
Awooga, who is
he?
Awooga.
He is He has the same last name as Hugh Grant, my favorite. So I decided to get really into him and, like, go through his filmography because I am a thirst watcher. I am a champion thirst watcher.
You are.
Thank you. It's one of my talents. So, yeah, I just started, like, going through his Letterboxd filmography and just becoming obsessed with him and just, like, learning more about him and how he was, like, bi, most likely. And that was cool for me because I was also grappling with, like, figuring out my bisexuality, because that's what you do in college.
Of course.
Especially when you're double majoring in film and journalism. Yeah. Also, is it that you double majored in film and journalism and now you, like, actually have a full career as a film journalist? Like, when has that ever
happened? It never happened. Yeah, like, I was, like, shocked. Like, that I was like, I actually get to use both degrees, like, what, like,
in tandem together in one job?
That's gorgeous.
Yes.
Wow.
I was like, they said I could never do it, they said, but
David,
yes.
But you can.
David, Susan, but yeah, so that is like, that is my relationship. Was he also helped get me into older films, like classic films, because I feel like it's almost like learning somewhat of a new language. It's a different cinematic 100%. Language. Yeah. These older, like, black and white films from, like, almost 100 years ago. So he helped me with that. Thank you, Cary, for helping me ignite my love of classic cinema. That is my beautiful, beautiful love story with him. Yes.
It is you have to learn. I think that's, like, the hardest thing, especially when you're younger. Because, I mean, like, even though I've watched old movies for as long as I can remember, I do, like, the first time you are watching old cinema, it's a completely different language. How they shoot things, how the, like, dialogue, everything is completely foreign. So, like, being able to, like, slowly, like, build up your tolerance or learn how to watch something, like, learning how to watch something is obviously, like, done within the movie itself. Like, a movie will tell you how to watch a movie, but, like, if it's a silent film, you can't go from, like, the Avengers to watch a Charlie Chaplin movie
same.
You know, it's how are you, like, adjusting how you
cinema
watch something.
Cinema is a spectrum. I also, Jordan and I went to college together.
What a reveal. No one knew this.
I don't know if you had
the same. I didn't know that. That's all. That's very special. I love my college friends. It's very special.
Jordan was my RA. He Jordan ran the film immersion floor at film school, which was for, like, is film school not enough for you?
Right. It was like, this is for the losers.
Go on the film immersion floor. Jordan, I don't know if you had the same freshman class that I did, but
I think I know what you're about to talk
bringing
about.
Bringing Up Baby, the first time that I saw Bringing Up Baby was in freshman year, like, cinema 101 in a giant ass screening room, professionally projected. Whole class was laughing their asses off. And it was, I think we only saw, like, three full movies that entire year. We saw full Citizen Kane, full Singing in the Rain, and full Bringing Up Baby. Everything else was, like,
straight heaters.
Those are the basically three movies.
Yeah.
They didn't make any more.
The three movies ever. Yeah.
Yeah, they stopped making them after those.
Recipe cinema. Yeah.
But I will talk to people and they'll be like, have you seen this? Have you seen that? And I was like, I've seen a 15-minute excerpt.
Like,
from
a supercut. Yeah.
Yeah. But this was one of, like, our professor was so big on this movie that she was like, I will show you this whole movie.
Was it a blonde, like, a short bobbed blonde woman?
Yeah, Dr. Banks.
Yeah, we had, look at that, we had the same teacher.
She was
so
also
cute.
She was also my thesis advisor, so
fun.
She and I, like, got to reconnect, which was great. I was like,
that's cute.
That is honestly a lot of responsibility, I feel like, as a professor at, like, a film school, is to be like, all right, you ignorant children who don't know anything about cinema, let me teach you everything in one semester about, like, 20s to 40s.
Literally, like, modern, like, yeah.
Like, dawn of silent film to talkies to, like, the 40s. Yeah. My 50s to contemporary class was, I don't want to talk about it.
No,
it was
bueno.
So weird. It was so weird.
Oh, my God. I remember my history of the motion picture classes.
Yes.
We've all done it.
We've all done it. Think about it. We're doing it now. You know, we're teaching our listeners. Like, that's a responsibility we have to bear.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. We are very brave for this. We are very brave for this. I also want to say that my first like film school Cary Grant picture was His Girl Friday, was the film that I was shown in my film school that made me go, who is this? And what is he doing?
Mm-hmm. Another, are you ready for another this? Howard Hawks joint.
I still haven't seen it.
Brooke B. Solomon.
I'll keep this quick. So every Valentine's Day, my lovely fiance, will he still be my lovely fiance?
I was
when
just
going to
ask.
Out?
Wait, it might be your lovely husband.
Let's see.
Scream. I'm very excited for you.
As of right now, he's still my lovely fiance. But by the time this comes out, no, we won't be married yet. So we'll see. But every Valentine's Day, we will watch a rom-com that neither of us have seen.
That's cute.
I pitched What's Up, Doc? This year. We didn't end up doing it. I also pitched His Girl Friday, but he saw it in film school, and I didn't. We ended up watching The Lady Eve, and halfway through the movie, I was like, I've already seen this. I watched this last year and completely memory-holed it. I don't know what was going on.
Good movie, though.
It was so good. Even better the second time around. Talk about a movie with some great pratfalls.
Oh, my God.
I think His Girl Friday and What's Up, Doc? Both need to go on the docket stat.
Those are two of my all-time favorites.
Yes. Yeah. And we always try to pick like a heater so that we know that we'll like it. Because again, there are simply so many movies and so many
there's
of them
so many.
I have not seen.
Because Brooke, you only saw three movies growing up, so it makes sense that you're catching up now.
I'm so behind. It's so bad.
What's Up, Doc? Was my dad's like? So my dad is my dad's a silly dad. My dad doesn't like horror. He likes some thrillers or whatever, but like comedy is his like that's his mode. And I like distinctly remember the one of the earliest movies where he like sat me down and was like, "You need to see this." Is What's Up, Doc? Because he was like one. It's funny. And two, Barbara Streisand, who is, of course, if you're a Jewish man, is like the most formative crush you can have growing up if you were born in the 1960s. Yes. So it was like, this is cinema you need to take in. And I don't like that is maybe one of our most perfect movies. It's unbelievable how good it is.
Yeah.
The whole chase. Are you kidding me?
Oh my God, the chase scene. Sorry, Brooke. I'm so sorry. No, I don't want to exclude you.
Yeah. Well, I actually know a decent amount about What's Up, Doc? Because of Down With Love.
Yes,
because and I love like this is what is so special, I think, about like continuing to preserve and talk about like Bring Up Baby is obviously a very famous movie. It's not like we're talking about some under
the Eagle
masterpiece here, but like the Eagle. Good. But like Bring Up Baby informing What's Up, Doc, which informs Down With Love, which might inform like an incredible comedy 5 or 10 years from now. And like passing the torch over and over and over again is just so beautiful.
Do you know that Madeline Kahn's in it?
It's her first role. It says introducing Madeline Kahn.
She's
like the Alice Swallow role where she's the stuck up or not stuck up. She has a stick up her ass. She's the fiance who he's like kind of trying to ditch.
But it's also like Madeline Kahn. So you're like, this is like the world's most gorgeous woman with also the craziest voice imaginable.
Yes. Well, I feel like that's like an improvement is that like to make that character.
Right. A character.
Well, yes. Not more than a simple inconvenience.
Right.
Like an actual. What we were saying earlier, too, about learning to watch old movies. I feel like I really noticed with this one because of the fact that they were, you know, shooting with a live cat most of the time. There's so much more cutting and there's so many more traditional kind of like close-ups than I'm used to, especially from the screwballs, which are so based on movement and interaction and these big kind of like roving wide shots just following the actors giving it their all. Like, but there's a lot more kind of like shot reverse shot and Bringing a baby to hide the
cat.
Insane
it's also
things.
So much rear projection. Like you can tell like the layers in which they are projecting everything onto the background and then filming on top of that. Mm-hmm. Especially like when they're like in the car where it's so clearly the cat is in a different car.
The car scene though, because it's double. It's two layers of rear projection. You film the background, then you film the cat, then you film the background and the cat and the people.
They really like had a live ass cat in this movie. It is really
a trained leopard.
Like a trained leopard, and it's the titular baby. It is. I just remember that's like, that's Baby. Like, whenever I would hear about this movie, like the title or whatever, I just always assumed it was a human baby. Would you ever guess it was a leopard named Baby? No. Yes.
No. You never put Baby in a corner. You never put Baby never. In a corner.
Oh, never, never, never.
It's wonderful. So apparently it's a panther in the original short story that this is based on. They couldn't find a panther, had to go with the leopard. Thank God, because Katharine Hepburn saying the word leopard is everything
leopard
to me.
Leopard.
That was very good. Oh, yeah.
Leopard. And I like when Carrie's like, Susan, I don't like leopards. It's like, how do you even know that? Like, have you interacted with them before? Like, oh, there's a lot of good leopard lines. Also, I have to say something about the leopard. I think the leopard is queer because it really likes music and it's gay to like music.
Well, you know what? Like, that's
the leopard,
so true.
The leopard can only be tamed by listening to like kind of a pop song, like a romance pop song. It's like,
yes.
That's kind of gay.
What is the song they're singing again?
I can't give you anything but love,
right. Baby.
A jazz standard.
Yes, jazz standard. It says it's an American popular song and jazz standard. Yes, yes, mm-hmm. yes.
Gorgeous. Mm-hmm. I will, you know what? Sure, the cat is queer. Why not?
Thank you. Why not? Like, let's just say it.
I get it. You know, I understand.
We should play Charlie XCX for that leopard and see what happens.
The cat starts life. Doing like poppers.
Yeah. Let's ride. In the car, when it's in the car. Van cam with the leopard in the car set to Let's Ride. Or
there
set
it
to
is. Yeah.
All right. We got a lot of
van supercuts. Cams to cook up.
Yes,
but
yes.
It's all worth it. It's all worth it.
There, did you see that there was like a comment about this movie where they were talking that it's like the feral stepchild of Screwballs, which also, if you read into that, you're like, well, yes, because of like how screwy it is. But like, it's also feral because there's a literal just cat in it. And wait, Brooke, we need to mention the dog. Asta,
yes.
The dog from The Awful Truth is back.
That's the same dog
same
from The Awful
dog.
Truth?
Same
oh my
dog.
God.
What a star. So I love this dog. His name is Skippy.
Skippy, right. That's what it is.
Skippy.
Well, but he was Asta
in the series, the Thin Man. Yes.
The Thin Man.
Wow. This dog was booked and busy.
The dog, not since Snoop from Anatomy of a Fall has
literally,
a dog.
Oh my God, that dog. That is
has a dog been so famous. Like, first of all, wired hair terriers are like the prototypical movie dog because they're nice and small.
Mm-hmm.
They're compact. I think they respond very well to like training and they're so cute. But yes, this dog would be credited as Skippy, would be credited as Asta. It was unclear.
What's his name? Do you think he was really playing with the panther? Like, how did they get it to do that? And the panther didn't just eat it. Like, they're really roughing each other up.
They're pretty close. I have no idea. I tried to look this up. It might be on, you all have the Criterion, right, Jordan?
I do, yeah.
Did you watch the Criterion for this?
I did.
Did you watch any of the features?
I did not. I did
Can
not have time.
Can you tell me anything about the features? Vaguely.
If I get it, I could tell you. But I read the book. Like, the booklet's great about, like, the movie. Mm-hmm. But I didn't watch any special features. I didn't have time.
Because I want to know. No, you're good. I was wondering if there was, like, a baby special feature.
Well, it'd probably Mia be, like, bad because of answer. Abuse. I'm sure these animals were treated not well. But
yeah, yeah, yeah. This feels like something that we could not do today, and
no.
That's okay. But I was just looking at the special edition features of the Criterion Bringing Up Baby. It features an audio commentary from 2005 featuring filmmaker Peter Bogdanovich.
Yo.
There it is.
Look
and he's
at
like,
that.
I love this scene. I love that scene. This is great. And I'm like, wow, me too.
Wow, me too. Oh my God, there's audio excerpts from a 1972 conversation between Hawks and Bogdanovich.
That's fun.
Like,
that's fun.
Oh, Peter, you were such
this,
a real
like,
one. Oh.
Passing of the torch. It's so sweet.
That's so sweet.
Yeah. The biggest things that I could find about filming with a literal tamed leopard from Brazil were that Katharine Hepburn was not fucking afraid of this leopard because, of course, she's not afraid of anything. And they like got along pretty well. Cary Grant, not a fan.
Yeah, I heard he was really afraid of the leopard, which is sexy
Makes
to
sense.
Me. I don't know. Yeah. It's sexy when a man is scared.
Oh,
I
of course. Yeah.
Agree. there is something kind of hot about a van being cursed. That's also true. I love how they are playing essentially their characters,
yes,
on and off screen, and also how the dynamic mirrored so perfectly like what they need to be doing.
Did you read about like how they would be laughing so much that production would get delayed, which is mm-hmm. the cutest thing imaginable?
Yes. This movie went, I think, $200,000 over budget. It was supposed
and for that
to
time
cost,
period,
it was supposed to cost $800,000. It ended up costing over $1 million. Everyone's quotes got raised during production, and on top of all that, it was like a giant flop.
Slay. It's also like crazy because like it at everyone's careers at the time too. They were all in like a weird position because yes. Hepburn was kind of tanking.
So here's where
box
we were.
Box office poison.
Box office poison. So fucking rude. Cary Grant was on the up and up. He had just been in The Awful Truth, which like launched him. He's on the up and up. Hepburn is on the downswing for some reason. But apparently this film revitalized a lot of people's critical interest in her because she's so funny in it.
Yeah.
And she wasn't really known for that. Even though it's like this, does this like... I think Sylvia Scarlett predates this, which is a comedy.
Yes, and that was right before. Have you guys seen that one?
No, I'm dying. I think David Campbell talked to us about it. Yeah, yeah. When did you
good?
See it?
It's good. I saw it in theaters. They played at the Los Feliz 3.
Fuck.
It was not as, I will say, it's not as funny as I thought it would be. It's a little bit serious. It's definitely not as funny as this one. I will say, but I am excited for y'all to eventually cover it because it is extremely queer. Like it belongs on this pod.
I think that's like, you might be like the fourth or fifth person to tell us cover this movie.
I think maybe we should do it. Maybe we should do it, Jordan.
Let's just do it.
Or
why
not? I don't know. Or maybe we could get a round table, get some people
round
coming. It's definitely, it's high on my, I want to do that. I really want to do Morocco. I really want to do Johnny Guitar.
Oh, yeah. Oh, also in Sylvia Scarlett, Cary Grant is doing like an English accent. He's doing Cockney accent, which is fascinating because he's British, I guess. Well, because he's an Englishman.
He's English.
He's English. But, you know, he gives transatlantic vibes because that's how they make him talk. That's how they make everybody talk. So, like, I forget that he's fully an Englishman.
That he's actually British. The transatlantic accentification of old Hollywood is crazy. I feel like in The Lady Eve, I need to look up if Barbara Stanwyck is English as well, because they have her do an English accent for, like, the second half of that film. And she, like, low-key sounds the same because it's already the transatlantic
Brooklyn,
accent is already
she's from
half,
Brooklyn, New York.
Half British. She's from Brooklyn. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I didn't know if one of those like if it was one of those like, well, you need to be English. And she's like, oh, well, luckily for
well,
you.
I can pull this out.
Yeah. The transatlantic accent is so funny. It was just because they were like, oh, English audiences will be confused if they talk American, and American audiences will be confused if they're talking English. So we need to do a weird amalgamation of the two so that nobody gets confused or alienated, which is very funny because it's like you just invented.
We should
something.
Bring it back. We should bring transatlantic accents back.
Like, yes, a lot. Well, when the screwball comedy renaissance happens, we can start bringing back the transatlantic accent. I think somebody should start doing like more period pieces that are set at that time, and everybody's
and
talking
actually
like that.
Do well. Yeah. It's sort of we invoked Cate Blanchett in The Aviator, but she's doing more of a Katharine Hepburn impression than like an actual like we're doing a transatlantic accent because of the time. But I totally agree. Like, I want people to talk old timey for like the purposes of period accuracy.
Austin Butler adopting like a transatlantic accent as his next accent would be so funny.
We
he goes
need it.
He's like down here, but then all of a sudden he's doing like bup, 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 bup. That'd be really good.
That's a good next voice. Use the voice.
Use the voice.
We're just going to superimpose Katharine Hepburn's face over Use the Voice.
Yeah.
I always think of Hepburn, though, as like the prototypical transatlantic accent haver, partially because she is from Upper Crust, Connecticut, which I think is the birthplace of
that's
the
where it is.
Accent, if we're going to do that. And like she started in theater, so she has that sort of like trained professionalism to her before like breaking in so high up. But yeah, has anyone ever seen The Little Women with her?
Oh, the George Cukor. Yeah. No. I have not seen that one. I've only seen Greta Gerwig Little Women.
Oh, okay. Well, first of all, I think you should see all three versions of Little Women plus the BBC America miniseries if you're so inclined, if you really like Little Women. It's quite good. It's Maya Hawke and Catherine Newton. It's a good time. It's really good. And the guy from The Little Mermaid, what's Jonah Howard King, is Laurie.
Oh.
And the Katharine Hepburn, The Little Women, is pretty good. She is Jo. She is giving.
She's so Jo.
She is giving lesbian.
Yeah, that's really gay of her to play Jo.
Yeah.
I'm trying to imagine her as like a little, like so young. Because she reads to me as like 20 plus forever. Like I'm trying to imagine like her as like young version.
The teenager Jo.
She kind of has the like that old school 20s 30s hairstyle with like all the curly bangs in front, like the headband situation. So she definitely does look young, but she has an old soul, you know. She has she's so sharp, she's so intelligent, she comes off as like so intelligent. I feel like she always plays like highbrow in some way, shape, or form, even in like something like Bringing Up Baby, where she's quote unquote ditzy, but she's an heiress because of course she is. Right. Like she either, I think, always has to be someone who is headstrong in their personal life or like in their upbringing. If she's playing someone that's more blue collar, she needs to be like the fucking baddest bitch to ever do it. And if she's playing someone, you know, sort of flighty, she needs to come from security. There's just like nothing about her that telegraphs anything other than like, I know what I'm about. Not even in like a classist sort of way, just like she's so confident, she's so self-assured as a performer.
David, where on earth can I get clothes that look so good?
Well, there's already a pretty good fit in this movie, Susan.
The whole movie is like fits
but
that go hard.
I could see Cary Grant and Katharine Hepburn, honestly, rocking the hell out of some Super Yaki merch.
Absolutely. Are you kidding me?
She can afford it. I mean, we can all afford it because Super Yaki is A+ quality merch at very affordable prices, made by some of the best people that we know. Supports independent artists, is extremely eco-friendly, diverse in sizing, diverse in theme and subject matter, and all a love letter across the board to cinema and filmmakers that we love. Really couldn't ask for anything better.
We love.
Do you want a recent rom-com collection? Tis the season a little bit.
I do.
Do you want to celebrate the recent end of award season?
I would love that.
Yeah. I mean, there's no shortage. Do you want to see some photos that were taken by a very talented individual of people in Super Yaki merch?
That's crazy. I wonder who that person is. That's so crazy, Brooke.
Writer's block, the Posy Posy. There is no shortage of collections, plus all of their rotating, you know, bestsellers that come and go and stay stocked. So whether you're in the market for clothing or books or home apparel or a little something for everyone, Super Yaki is your one-stop shop for everything cinema related. And guess what?
What?
We've got a little extra something special just for you.
Whoa.
The listener.
Whoa.
You can use code SUPERQQ to get 10% off your Super Yaki order. That's SUPERQQ, all caps, no spaces. Not quite as good of a gift as a pet leopard, but we do our best. We're working our way up the ranks, you know?
It's like intercostal clavicle, pet leopard,
Yaki discount code. I mean, we do our best. So yeah, if the spirit moves you, if all this and more sounds exciting to you, which it should, you can check out the wonderful collection at superyaki.com. That's SUPERYAKI.com. Let's watch more movies, darling.
I would love that, David. Should we talk about the plot?
Yes.
Oh,
there's a
right. There's a plot to the movie.
They go get it.
He's a paleontologist.
Shenanigans happen, but she thinks he's a zoologist.
Of course. And there's a big difference, folks.
Huge. One, live animals. The
live
other,
versus bones.
Dead.
Yeah.
Bones.
Dead.
Bones.
David.
Bones, Susan.
I mean, if you just think about it from a pure, you know, we're looking at it through a queer lens, Bone, you're like, him saying Bone so much? You kidding me?
Gay. It's gay to say Bone too many times. That is true.
It is.
Then and now.
How is anyone, no one is ever going to take us seriously.
No, I know.
Nor should they, really.
We should, like, if we want to talk about, like, the most explicitly queer bit, which we should. A switcheroo happens about, like, third of the way through this, probably like a third, where Cary Grant, they go to, you know, Aunt Elizabeth's house. He's showering. Katharine Hepburn takes his clothes. Susan steals David's clothes because she wants him to stay. She's like, put these in the dry cleaner, bring them downtown. Take your time. I need this man in my life, which she's so true for. Then he comes out. He's like, what do I wear? Oh my gosh. She's like, what do you wear? And he comes out with a frilly, silky robe.
Women's dressing gown. It is a very...
It feels
We don't know, but it's very much, I don't know the whereabouts of my second husband.
Yes.
Exactly. I looked up what the style was called. It's marabou trim. It's a marabou trim robe. Ooh, and hot. I was thinking, because I always bring it back to Down with Love. I was like, it's giving Down with Love. Barbara Novak would wear the hell out of that, as would Catcher Block. They could both wear it.
Wears that when she, you know, like the dance she does. I feel like, is that not like the same kind of?
She wears very similar. Yes, she wears a very similar robe type thing in the film. Yes, she does. So that's I am vindicated in thinking.
It's such a wonderfully dramatic. I think that people have decided to bring it back as like a statement piece again. Like, oh, maybe I did murder my husband. Maybe I didn't. I don't know. But like, it's so dramatic because the cut of it is very flattering. The sleeves are flattering. And if that's not enough, there's trim like all the way down to the floor. Like it's essentially a ball gown.
Yeah.
For the bedroom.
Yes.
And he looks great. Wears the hell out of it, if I do say so myself.
He really does. And I was also thinking, I was like, he's so tall and like it almost touches the ground. I'm like, who was wearing this? Like, was it just like going so, like, is it supposed to be like a train, you know? Like,
Oscar's gown.
Yes, exactly. Because I was like, okay, well, I know obviously they tailored it to him because he wears it, you know, I get it from a movie making perspective. But I was thinking about how it would look on the person who is supposed to be wearing it.
Like Katharine Hepburn, it would just drown her out.
Yeah.
It would be huge on her. We actually have to think about that.
It has three lines of like fur trim on the sleeves, and the sleeves themselves are translucent. So it's just a little something extra, really.
He looks incredible.
Yeah, and there's a translucent section at the bottom too. He looks so good. Anyway, he answers the door to Aunt Elizabeth. She says, "Why are you wearing that?" He faffs about for a minute trying to explain himself, and then finally gets exasperated and yells, "I don't know. I just went gay!" All of a sudden, and jumps in the air.
He jumps in the air
on the word "gay." It is extremely over the top. It is amazing. And it was apparently an ad-lib, as we discussed. And people believe that it may have been the first use in cinema of the word gay in the modern context.
Yes.
Yes.
Not meaning happy.
Yes. And I would believe that. And it's also like, it's interesting. Coming from Cary Grant, the rumors are flying. But not even in a mean way. Like when we are talking about the rumors, we're not meaning it in a pernicious
way. No. It's supportive.
It's supportive rumors. Yeah, yeah. Supportive rumors.
Encouraging. It was significant enough to make it into the celluloid closet. As like a, you know, a landmark kind of moment in Hollywood history. The original line is something along the lines of, "I suppose you think it's odd my wearing this. I realize it looks odd. I don't own one of these usually," which like kind
usually.
Of tips you off to the idea that his ad lib is in line with like that vibe.
Right.
You know, apparently there is an earlier film from 1933 called My Weakness, which I've never heard of, that has a reference like to
gay,
the word gay in that context, but it was considered like too risque and it was cut out. So this is, but this made the final cut. I mean, thank God it
slipped
did, because it's so funny. It's so funny, but it, yeah. I had seen this clip out of context before, and I assumed that it was the like kind of more archaic
happy,
you know, connotation. Because I was like, "There's no way. There's no way."
But yet there is. Life finds a way.
Life finds a way.
It's really funny, and then I love the image of him sulking on the stairs. Like,
yes.
Chin on his hands, bare feet planted on the floor, a dog annoying him, wearing this floofy robe. That's so good.
It's incredible. He's just, he knows what he's doing. He knows he looks good.
Yes. He, oh my God, he really does. And also it's like, okay, one of my theories is that it is a very feminist act to kind of like embarrass yourself for the entertainment of women.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Which is what he's doing here. I mean, I don't find it embarrassing what he's doing. Hey, to be clear, we love and support his robe. But, you know, the public will be like, that's embarrassing that he's wearing that. So I think it is very feminist of him to be like, I'm going to embarrass myself so that women can have a laugh.
Yes.
And I think that's beautiful. It's just like the dads from Mamma Mia. You know, Ryan Gosling is Ken and Barbie.
Yes.
That's a good call. Yeah. Yes, 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 yes. So thank you, Cary Grant, feminist.
Unkinder people might refer to this character as a beta male. I refer to him as my potential boyfriend.
Yes.
I think this is the best dynamic ever, is like bossy woman, flustered man. It's quite queer coded. When we were watching The Lady Eve, Evan was like, are you guys going to do this on the podcast? These like gender roles are pretty crazy. And I was like, yeah, that's like the whole point of Screwballs. But, but like,
you flip the table mid-watch.
I think it makes a huge difference because crucially at the end of the day, like he gets the girl and she gets the guy. And it's portrayed as a very healthy relationship. And I think like, whereas you have noirs, which are dealing with that same sort of like gender flipped roles and like talking about like the underbelly of like American society, those have to end with the characters that do bad things like being punished. Whereas Screwballs, like there's nothing is shown to be wrong or off kilter or questionable about these relationship dynamics, and they end in a happily ever after.
Yeah.
So it's really like I think a familiarizing.
We can have it all.
You can have it all.
You can have it all.
You can. Because it's up, like the nature of their relationship inherently goes against like what quote unquote like heteronormative relationships at the time would have been, just because of how unnatural quote unquote like they themselves are when they are together and or separately. And I think like that's what's so interesting about it. Like she also as like a like an animalistic mask slayful queen is pulling out like this repression from him, because he's like so deeply into his dinosaurs and is so chaste, but she's like pulling this like being out of him, which if you want to like look at it is like a more mask person pulling this out of a more, you know, femme when he's, you know, wearing a robe, etc.
He's the one that has the fiance, but she's you know, she's the one that like is always making the first move on him.
Very active. Yes.
Yes. Yeah. We talked about hiding his clothes so that he'll stay. But David, you are so good looking without your glasses on. You know, she keeps dragging him through this movie saying, don't leave me, don't leave me, don't leave me. I need you here. I want you here, but is still entirely capable at the same time.
Yeah.
That's why I love is that she's a very active character. And it's made very clear to the audience that she doesn't actually need him there. Like she wants him there.
Yeah.
I think my favorite like edit in the whole movie is when they realize that there are actually two leopards.
Yes.
a leopard ex machina. That there's like a bloodthirsty, like untamed leopard
at
a nearby
leopard
circus. Susan has gone off to go capture because she thinks it's baby. And David is like, well, we have to go find Susan. She's useless without me. And then it cuts to her just dragging the leopard into the police station without a fucking problem.
Yeah, it's so good.
It's so good.
Oh my god, I love when they have when they're doing that. I love when they fall down the hill when it's like, okay, they're he falls down the hill as he is wont to do. He's often falling.
He loves a hill fall.
Yes, he loves a hill fall, and then she watches him and she's like laughing her ass off, which makes her fall down, and then she falls down the hill and then she catches him with the net.
Yes.
And then that makes her laugh even more. And then he's just like sitting there in the net like, oh.
Rats.
And in my mind, like he's like thinking like rats, but he's also like looking at her laughing. And I feel like it's this moment where his walls are kind of starting to come down a little bit. And he's kind of starting to be like, okay, she's kind of fun to be around. I guess I'm laughing for the first time in my life. He seems like he's never laughed before.
Absolutely
he has
not.
Met this woman. So it's good that she's injecting some much needed whimsy into his life.
Her laugh also, the she does. It's so good. It's so crazy because it's not a normal laugh. And it's like, it's so quick. It's like, it's, oh my God.
And it's like, she's saying a line, doesn't take a breath to laugh, like laughs and then continues the line unbroken.
Yes.
It's incredible. I made the mistake of trying to multitask a little bit while I was watching this movie. I was like, well, I'll just like keep half an eye on something else. I think I lasted 15 minutes before I was like,
I'm back. Nope. I'm locked. Yeah,
I am like, we're done. I'm putting everything away. I'm going to sit in bed. I'm getting cozy. I'm getting a snack. And I am just glued to this movie.
I love the whole running gag though between the two of them where she's always like, David, why are you following me? And it's so clearly her just being like, boop, 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 I love this man, like, please love me back. It like also, like, as you were saying, Brooke, from the beginning she like sets out, she's like, I'm gonna marry this person. Like, she tells Aunt Elizabeth, she's like, this is the person that I've never loved anyone like this person before. And David has not once been like, I like you. It's constantly like, you are a nuisance to my life. Yeah.
Once
he,
again,
like, explicitly doesn't like her.
It is the I think it's the dream relationship, because this also again, it's, you know, there is definitely an element to, I think, watching a classic movie. I mean, not just classic movies, but a lot of times where there's an antagonistic relationship between the male and female characters, you're like, oh my God, he fucking hates her. Like, they should not be together.
Yeah. Like, but it works.
I think this works because, yes, he's very exasperated by her, but he's also so charmed.
Yeah.
And like,
he's in denial.
Yes, she sweeps him off his feet, like, literally. He's sort of windswept and flustered by this tornado of a woman. They walk a very good line performance-wise, and I think script-wise and, you know, direction-wise, of being like, yes, they're a mess together, but we totally see the vision. Yeah.
We see the vision. Yes.
We see the vision.
I mean, I think that's what the whole ending is about, is like, I love how the two of them, like, he starts rocking with her as she's rocking back and forth. And she's like, David, why are you rocking? And he's like, you're the one who's rocking.
And that,
like,
it's she,
because so he's just so open to go with her, you know, like, with the flow, with like her chaos.
Mm-hmm. I love her. I understand. I have like big heart eyes for her character. I totally understand falling in love with her. She's so magnetic.
He
and
goes,
so
I love you.
Much fun.
I think.
Yes.
I think I love you. I don't know.
That, because he's just so like emotionally unintelligent, you can just really tell that he has no idea how to process his emotions, because all he does is like look at bones all day.
All that he wants is is the damn clavicle. The intercostal clavicle.
Nothing like your intercostal clavicle.
I also love what a positive movie this is. I think that it's nice that it's a screwball comedy without any betrayals, without any breakups. It makes that sort of, like you said, what the feral, like, sibling element of this really work. Like, they dig up boots buried by a dog for 2 days. And she's like, oh, look, another boot. Isn't that wonderful?
Isn't it wonderful, David?
Burying the boots. It's so silly. The dog.
I love that
boots.
Little dog. I really do love dogs in
that dog
movies.
Best dog.
Like a little dog doing tricks in a movie. I did not particularly care for the artist, but I love that damn dog so much. I think that dog is at
that's
least
what won
25%
the artist the best
of the recent it won Best Picture.
Yeah.
Which means we might be seeing Anatomy of a Fall sweep.
No, exactly. Well, that dog is campaigning.
That
like,
dog is
I've
that
been,
dog's hitting
I've
the
been
fucking,
seeing, yeah. I've been seeing that dog yeah. around at events. Like, yeah. they're trotting him out. And he's also yeah. very, very sweet. Very sweet dog. I did meet the dog, as you
humble brag.
I am humble bragging about this dog because it's like
as
the best dog
should.
I've ever interacted with.
He's a good dog.
He's
I mentioned
a, he
this
was like such a good boy.
I mentioned this on our qualies, our awards episode. But Mia, I had a border collie growing up for Aww. Many years, and so I love border collies. I have such a soft spot for them. They are the best. They're the best dogs. They're perfect film dogs because
yes.
they need a job. Like yeah. if they don't have a job, it. I mean, who can relate?
Yeah, yeah. Oh my God, yeah.
If I don't have a job, I also lose all sense of purpose. But like, they're not very good pets.
Yeah.
If you can't
you need a,
provide
you need
them
space. Yeah.
Something to herd. You need more than space. You need purpose. Okay. You have to
a
give
dog's
the
purpose.
Yeah.
Oh, 2017 or whatever year that came out.
Yeah, I dog. Did not. See, I didn't see that one. I'll admit, I only know the title.
Is the dog in Dog with a Blog a border collie?
A dog's purpose, oh probably. I think Dog with a Blog is for
I'm
sure.
I'm thinking about
a border collie.
The dog with
the dog
a blog,
with a blog
is in fact a fucking border collie.
Oh my God, I had forgotten about the dog with the blog. I did. I have seen a couple episodes of that one.
I'm telling you gotta give the dog a job. So I'm
a dog's purpose is 2017. The fact that my brain
nice. You
unfortunately
knew that.
That's
concerning
that
to me.
That is so upsetting.
Anyway, big fan of dogs. Big fan of this cute little Scottish wire hair terrier. He's just adorable. And he's a very good boy. They do a good job.
He's great. I mean, yeah. we should talk about the tertiary characters because Aunt Elizabeth in the book has a partner or a friend, rather, I'm sorry, who she lives with named Drusilla. And they're kind of bickering, which means they're a little bit more queer-coded, obviously, in
oh
the
my
book.
God.
Because
it's
just
gay to bicker.
It's gay yeah, to bicker.
But also,
it's also gay to live with someone
all,
when you're in your
70s. Live with a
yeah.
friend. Every
yeah.
spinster...
It's so gay to live with a friend. Oh, my God.
I really do believe that every spinster that has moved into a home with another woman... I mean, if you were just platonic friends, that's so great for you.
Right.
But
I'm
I
happy
need you to understand that I will assume you're gay.
Yes, yes. Absolutely. And not even in the pernicious way, as we were saying. Like,
yes.
it's a supportive assumption. It's like, we love that.
We're big fans of that.
We're big fans of that.
Prefer it, some would say.
You know, the actress Jean Arthur?
Yes.
Yes, yes. Of You Can't Take It With You in like some Jimmy Stewart films. I remember watching her in those and being like, she's giving gay. I'm curious. And like going to her personal life section and being like,
interesting.
Okay. The personal life of Wikipedia. That is an awesome
it has
section
given
to
me
be in.
So many gifts. I will never forget this tweet that was like, if you want to know if someone's Jewish, go to the early life section. If you want to know if someone's gay, go to the personal life section. That yes. is how you find out. I also go to the early life section if I'm like, is this actor Italian or
oh my God,
are they a
my
person
life.
Of color?
Oh my God. Yes. I'm always going in there because I need to know as
I need
a Korean Italian. I'm like, I need to know if this person is Korean or Italian.
Or Italian.
Anytime I have an inkling that they might have some.
Yes.
Yes.
Which
yes,
is
yes. The,
that's how I learned that Andy Serkis was Lebanese. I didn't mean
what?
To, but I was,
okay,
I, was
King.
Looking, I was like, what?
What?
I feel like for the reverse where I just go and I'm like, do you have a parent who has a blue name or not? That's the really
oh,
the
oh you're,
God,
you're yeah. looking for the Nepo babies.
I'm like,
Wikipedia. I
my
see,
eyes
I see.
Are searching.
Before we get away from the sapphic woman of classic Hollywood, I definitely have invoked this book before on the podcast because honestly, we've been doing it for so long and there are only so many books that I can read. There's this book called The Sewing Circle, which is about
yes.
basically like the women that loved women in classic Hollywood and about how it was like this sort of like supportive network that was served as like a sort of the early stages of like Me Too feminism as well as being like a safe space for people to explore their sexuality and that like this it was a way for women to like trust each other to hear about like what was going on around town that it was like a sewing circle in a sexual way but also in like a trustworthy way
like feminist way
yeah exactly and we're talking like Marlena Dietrich and
oh my
Joan
God,
Crawford
her, yeah, her suits,
and Katharine Hepburn.
Yeah.
yeah. yeah, Greta Garbo, like
the queens.
Yeah.
The queens. Yeah. I also need to amend my Jean Arthur thing. I just went to her Wikipedia page. I don't want to report false news. So I went to her personal life section on Wikipedia, and she was married a couple times in her early life, but then she was single for a very long time. She had no children with these men. And then in 1979, Patsy Kelly told some man named Bose that Arthur was a lesbian. This is new to the personal life section. They did not confirm this until very recently, so I just need
Let's go.
News. Let's okay. effing go. Yes. Confirmed. This is actually huge for me. My gaydar is so accurate.
Vindicated.
I were so correct. That's, I knew it.
It's sort of like, Catherine Hepburn has a similar trajectory where like she and Spencer Tracy are lauded as this like, you know, great love story, fairly, but that they were like a professional relationship as well as a personal relationship and were sort of this like, great kind of lost love, but like she never married as far oh no she was married for 6 years and
but it's different back
divorced.
Then everyone was just
the studio
you had
was
to be
literally
you had
marrying
to be.
You
Cary Grant
yeah.
was yes. married four times
yeah. No, you
especially get married
if you're a woman
so many times
you gotta
yeah.
get yes. married so it was pretty huge that she was only married for 4 years like from 1928 to 1934 has no like children and was like a staunchly independent woman who was always just like I run in the circles that I want to run in. I don't give a fuck if there are rumors about me being a lesbian and I don't care like
I love it. One last thing. I feel like Elizabeth also is kind of like, if you look at her and Applegate, they are kind of also inversing a little bit the norms because she is more of the like tough, staunch on her own, whereas Applegate is kind of like bumbly, doesn't really have his life together. He calls himself a niece slash aunt at that one point where
yes.
he's like sputtering.
Yes.
You know, I don't know. I don't feel like even though they have like romantic relationship, I don't feel like they are like romantic as a couple. Like ultimately they just feel like we're friends versus anything else.
Yeah. And it's I don't know, again this is a world of like powerful independent women who again like wear the pants, control the money, control the resources. They're going like to her aunt's place. It's not yeah. a family estate. It is like her aunt, like
her home
runs this
yeah
shit
gorgeous shit. Home.
They've got a leopard for her. Hello.
A baby.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's again, it's a very, very independent.
Yes.
Lee driven film of
yeah.
women. I fucking love
it's
it.
It's great.
It's so good. It's so
we
good.
Love it. We love it.
It is kind of crazy that it was critically disliked at the time, but it didn't. I don't think so.
Not if I was around.
I know.
I would be four favesing the hell out of these guys on the red carpet. Like I would be promoting this.
Oh, if only I would give.
Cary
I would give
Grant
a whole lot of
money.
We
favorites.
Need Cary Grant for faves. We need them.
I would actually love to know. Truly.
I know, me too.
Apparently though, this film wasn't as much of a disaster as I feel like its like reputation indicates. It did relatively well. It just wasn't a success.
Right.
And obviously has been reclaimed as I feel like one of the greatest screwball comedies like yeah. of the genre. It certainly, and again, I think this might be partially due to the fact that we were introduced to it so early in our college career when I was starting to be like, what is a screwball comedy? What are films from before, you know, modern times that I think of this as like such a pinnacle of the genre? But I think
totally.
It's like one of the best remembered, you know, classic screwballs.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like Hawks in general was just like, hold my beer.
Right.
I'm going to pump
I
out
know,
a
we
few
didn't really
of these
talk
bad
about
boys.
Hawks. But he rocked.
Well, we talked about him twice already with, you know, How to Marry a Millionaire and this. No, Gentlemen Prefer Blondes. Sorry.
Yeah.
Ooh, yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. And we brought up His Girl Friday, of course.
Exactly.
That one is like my opinion. Like, I love Bringing Up Baby, but I really love His Girl Friday.
Interesting.
Partially because it's journalism also. I just like.
Okay.
I like that part.
All
I am biased.
Right.
I'm very biased towards the journalism aspect of His Girl Friday.
Yeah.
It is always interesting what screwballs people have as their, like, because they are all, you can kind of like everyone has a fave screwball. So it's like, what's your number one? You know,
what's your number one, Jordan?
I mean, they're all so good.
Of like, are we screwballs of this
era?
Okay, limited to this era. Okay.
Yeah. So I think His Girl Friday is a
His
good
Girl Friday's Friday. For me. That's for
There's
me.
Lady yes. Eve. Yeah. You have this. Mm-hmm. Philadelphia Story, kind of. I won't count that one, though.
I would. Are you,
it's a little screwy.
That? Yeah, it's pretty screwy.
I mean, It Happened One Night is like a certified banger. Like, yes. top to bottom.
Yes. Well, that was
romantic.
Like the first. It was That's like the most iconic, influential
Iconique.
Rom-com that they took every trope from. I just wrote a big, I'm plugging something. I wrote a big article on It Happened One Night and its impact on cinema. You can read that on Letterboxd's online magazine journal. Boom.
Hell.
Bang, bang. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Hell to the yeah.
Book, what's yours?
I think that, I do think that mine is The Lady Eve. I love it so much. I would say Some Like It Hot.
I don't know if that's screwball comedy. I think that might be just comedy.
Not really romance in it.
There, there is some romance, though. Yes,
I think
there kind of is. Well, the last line.
Of course. I mean, please. Of course. But I mean, like, it's not billed as romance necessarily.
There's just, there are elements. There are romance elements, but it's
I would say The Lady Eve, but maybe when I watch My Favorite Wife or His Girl Friday, I will reconsider. I do love Bringing Up Baby, but it is, Jordan, it's so you. It's that, so.
I think it is my number one. This and It Happened One Night are my two.
Yes, I love Bringing Up Baby, but it's so chaotic that I tend to like a little bit of like The Lady Eve is like sleek and it has con women in it. Like, it's very me. And Jordan, I feel like Bringing Up Baby is very you.
It is.
So
you're not wrong. So yeah. I just did a really unfortunate Google. So I wanted to cross check my thoughts. And I was like, I just didn't want to miss any that I might have seen. And I'm scrolling through screwball comedies that Google recommends. And what do I see there? But I now pronounce you Chuck and Larry being pitched as a screwball comedy. What world are we living in? That's not a screwball comedy.
Where's the comedy? Some would ask.
Have you all covered that one?
Oh, we did.
Okay, wait. I remember, actually. I remember seeing you guys post about it.
Cursed.
2 hours of my life I'll never get back. It was actually a great episode, though. It was so much fun to chat about. Great guest, of course. Yes. But, yeah, like, insane movie. Absolutely insane.
Wow, this, like, they really fuck up. Google Rex are always terrible. They're saying, like, Little Fockers.
No,
is
none of these.
There's no respect.
There's a huge difference between comedy and screwball comedy. And I think a screwball comedy, like, essentially has to have romance in it.
Yeah.
Like, it's preferred. We need it.
I think it's pretty essential to at least my understanding of the definition.
I'm looking at, like, the list right here. I think the last, like, good screwball comedy would be Intolerable Cruelty, which is a Coen Brother movie.
I'm a defender of Intolerable Cruelty.
It's
People
a good
really
movie.
Hate on it.
It's
People
good.
People really hate it. I know.
It's hot.
I agree.
It's
George Clooney and Catherine
stars.
Zeta-Jones.
Like,
when
kidding
people
me?
Are hot, it's great. Yes. Yeah. I'll amend. I think that any film to be, like, seen as a screwball comedy, it needs to be a two-hander rather than, romance. Something where it's like, this is a comedy vehicle? No. Like, absolutely not. Or like, this is a comedy that has a romantic subplot? No. Like, it needs to, we need the two stars.
Yeah.
Like, and it's built on their interactions. Yeah. That's a screwball comedy.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
I'm nodding vigorously. Very vigorously.
It's like your head
anyway,
banging.
I love this movie. Thank God people have come around to it and love it. And every time we talk about a classic film, it just gets me so amped to talk about and discover, think about more classic films.
I'm excited for you to watch His Girl Friday.
I know.
And
so
What's
fun.
Up, Doc? Those
and
are
What's
both going to change your
Huge.
World.
What's,
I know
what's
they
up
are.
Doc is like chemistry altering, you know?
Yeah.
Yes. There's, I did get to have, I got to have a moment where I showed Evan When Harry Met Sally for the first time. That was pretty, and
for
we watched
first
it.
Time?
Are you ready for this? Are you ready for this? This was during it, like, an anniversary trip of ours. We watched it on VHS.
Oh, that's
on,
romantic.
Like, a old school early aughts TV that had been like specially updated to like play like the VHS collection.
That's sweet.
Fuck. When Harry Met Sally on VHS hits different. I was in New York. It was fall. I was wearing a sweater. Oh my God, it was amazing. So anyway.
I just saw it on 35.
Yeah.
Like 2 weeks ago.
That's so special.
It was.
Wait, where? Which theater?
I was in the Bay Area. So not down. It was a little Valentine's Day
Jordan
thing we did.
Jordan was visiting a special someone.
I was. We saw a little When Harry Met Sally. But again, like bring back, you know, film. On film.
Yes.
It looks so
Bring
much better.
Bring back film. Yeah.
I'm clapping.
So much better.
Woo! That's why we love the New Beverly. That's why we love the Arrow.
The Los Feliz 3.
And
the Vista just reopened. That's where I saw What's Up Doc was at the Vista. Mm-hmm.
It sounds so good in there. The new set, like their speakers.
Yeah. I'm not as familiar with the New York theaters besides the Angelica, I want to say. But the, like what shows film in New York, but there's a ton. I just think it would be nice if there were more pockets of it. Around the country. But as we know, projection is like disappearing as like a job that you need like a trained person for, what you really do. But you think about like stuff like when in bringing up Baby, them using like matte matching on the actual print, like
that's awesome.
Painting things on the print to like splice together the images and then having to just reproduce that and project it.
Yeah.
Good skill.
I love a crossfade in these movies because you can tell when they're fading, like the image gets dark for a little bit too long when it's starting to fade in and then it lingers a little bit and then
it's
like
so
it adjusts to the full exposure.
Yeah.
Mwah.
Yeah.
We used to be a country.
Oh. We used to be a proper country that used to make movies.
We all did the same thing. We were like, well, let's go back.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a lot better back then.
You know, 1930s, I'm sure everything was better back then.
We would have all been fine as bisexuals. It would have
definitely
been fine.
Yeah.
I would have been fine as a Korean.
Oh, for sure.
I definitely
absolutely
would have been born. There were no miscegenation laws. Yeah. I think it would have been really
bring
good.
It back.
Bring it back, baby.
Although I will say, if I was a closeted bisexual who saw this film in 1938 at the theater, I would walk out and be like, that's early relationship that I want.
Yep.
That's what I'm looking for.
Where's my bumbling paleontologist?
Yes. I'm still asking that.
This is what I need.
Are there do we think paleontologists exist now? Or
yes,
is that,
it's a real got to.
I know, but like,
dinosaurs.
I feel like you hit your peak like late 90s, early 2000s. Like that's the hot
just
spot.
Just because of Friends.
Jurassic Park.
Well,
Brooke?
Yes, Jurassic Park. Yes.
Oh, dinosaurs were really
they
big.
Had a
dinosaurs
moment.
Dinosaurs were huge. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they were having
I think
a moment.
That paleontology is now underappreciated because we make dinosaurs with so much CGI, but there was a really interesting Apple TV like docuseries about dinosaurs that was like all this updated paleontology like information based on new fossils that they found. It was actually
that's
like,
pretty sick.
Fucking fascinating.
Isn't it okay, wait, this might be falsified information and I was listening and this might be from a podcast, but I think that, like so I'm just starting rumors already, but I don't know if Brontosaurus, okay, maybe Brontosauruses are real, but I feel like there were major dinosaurs in Jurassic Park that aren't actually, like, the bones they found weren't actually what the full dinos were, so they, like construed things.
I'm pretty sure that a Brontosaurus is
no,
a
Brontosaurus
real dinosaur.
Is a Brontosaurus. No, I know. I don't mean it's fake, but I feel like there are dinosaurs that we think of that they, like, are discovering like not all the bones that we thought are the
I
same
feel like
as those
the
bones.
Most recent thing from this Apple TV series that I found interesting was that velociraptors like definitively had wings and feathers.
That's so cool.
And
I was
they,
gonna
like,
say
they used like the little wings to like essentially like hop very long distances because they could like
so
go
scary.
Up down like cliffs and stuff. Yeah, they were kind of like killer turkeys, I think.
Oh my god. Yeah, I've heard that dinosaurs had feathers and
they
that
had feathers.
I do
yeah.
know that they're like chickens or dinosaurs. They're like
they
evolved
are.
Dinosaurs.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And when you look
yeah.
at their feet, you're like that's
a dino.
Dinosaur.
That's
feet.
A dinosaur.
That's dino yeah. feet.
I
the
had
beak
chickens
seems
growing
dino-y.
Up. They were like dinosaurs. They are scary.
Wow.
Like an angry
yeah.
chicken is terrifying.
We did not have chickens because of that reason.
Yeah. They're spooky.
Yeah.
They're spooky.
Anyway, good times all around.
Let's guess the average Letterboxd.
All right, Jordan, what do you think? What do you think the average Letterboxd rating
is? So I unfortunately didn't see it, but when I did log, I scrolled through what my friends rated it, and I saw, unfortunately, a lot of threes, which was a little bit of a bummer to me personally, because I felt like that was an attack, because I'm like, this is a five-star banger. I'm going to go a little lower than I would have guessed, so I'm going to go 3.6.
Okay. Mia, would you care to put in a guess?
I already know. I already know. I'm on this website every day of my damn life.
Jordan, it's a 4.0. Maybe your friends have bad taste. I don't know what to tell you.
Actually, I'm going to say it right here. All my friends have bad taste.
Yes. Say it. Unfriended. Sing it.
Although I am looking at one Mia Livaccino's profile right now, and you rated this 3.5 stars. Later upped it to 4.
I did up it. Okay. It's 4 stars now. Okay. It is 4 stars now. But yes, when I first watched it, I was still like kind of unfamiliar with the cinematic language.
You are familiar with Howard Hawks's game.
Yes. I'm sorry, Howard Hawks. I was unfamiliar with your game. But now I've upped it to 4.0. I remember like thinking like, oh, it kind of drags near the end when I watched the first time. And
I understand though, didn't remember very much of this movie, and when they got to like the part where they were in jail, I was like, damn, this thing is still going.
Yeah, sometimes during jail scenes I kind of zone out a little bit, and like every movie scene, I'm just like not really I just don't really care about jail that much, or the law. I just don't really care about the law because I don't respect
you're a rebel
I want to see like the leopard and dog and them. I want to see that stuff again. I want to see him in the robe. I don't really care about the jail. Bring back the robe. That like happens in His Girl Friday too, where there's like sometimes they start doing some law stuff and I'm like, I don't care about the romance. It's so good.
I'm looking up the 1939 Oscars because I need to know what got in ahead of this. So it's the 12th annual Oscars. That is insane.
Oh, wow. This film never stood a chance. Okay.
Well,
who we got?
This year kind of ate. I'm so sorry. Yeah. But Gone with the Wind wins, which is like, okay, sure. But you also have in there Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, a banger. You also have Of Mice and Men, Stagecoach, Wuthering Heights, Love Affair, Goodbye Mr. Chips, all, you know, whatever, blah, 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 Dark Victory. The Wizard of Oz comes out this year. I completely forgot The Wizard of Oz comes out this year.
Really?
Why did that not win Best Picture?
Bring Up Baby is 38, right?
Yeah, so it's the 1939 Oscars. No. I read ahead.
You're at the wrong year.
Correction. Okay, this year actually sucks. Why is Bringing Up Baby not in here? Like, you can't take it with you? Never seen it. Frank Capra, love him.
Oh, it's Jimmy Stewart. You Can't Take It With You is Jimmy Stewart and Jean Arthur. It's actually a really sweet movie. Okay. I'm sorry. I'm defending it.
This is good. Push back.
Yeah. Check it out. I recommend it. It made me, like, kind of teary. It's sweet.
Adventures of Robin Hood is good. But, like, I don't know.
I think I've seen that.
There are some in here I feel like you could have.
Bringing Up Baby over. Yeah, always. You Can't Take It With You. Sorry. Always. Sorry.
Speaking of our thoughts, where do we think this is landing on the QQ?
Lead it off.
Okay. I'm going to go 3.5 stars.
Hot.
I think. Yes. Because I really am stunned by the gender dynamics in this film. And I think, like, I've loved us kind of expanding our definition of like queer as a signifier, because it really can be so expansive and inclusive and is really not just about like necessarily like an othering nature or like looking at people on the outskirts of society. Like something like flipped gender dynamics reads very queer to me. Especially like this genre this time. I'm sorry, first use of the word gay.
You kidding me?
In a mainstream film? Come on. And I think the fact that like two notable bisexuals, Cary Grant and Katharine Hepburn, are in this together, that's the thing. I think Sylvia Scarlett is like gonna blow my mind when we eventually do that. So I'm gonna go 3.5. I feel good about that. Jordan, thoughts?
I was also going to go three. I feel comfortable with a 3.5. So we're holding hands at 3.5. I feel like it is
raising a leopard together.
You know, and there's nothing more gay than raising a leopard with someone.
Mm-hmm. And when it's when a leopard that likes music, the leopard also likes music. Gay. Yeah,
as singing, we have determined.
When the leopard is on the roof and they're just singing to baby. Also, the runner of her constantly annoying that one guy, like stealing his car, eating his olives, singing outside his house. Yes. I love when it's like one person's ruining
so
one life in particular. Like that is a great trope.
It's so funny.
But yeah, no, 3.5. This is great. It's such a perfect movie. I love it so much. The gender norms are fun. The queerness is so intrinsic to the characters themselves. And you have Katharine Hepburn being like, hey, there, David, don't you want to love me, David? I love you, David. And he's like, Susan! It's great. 3.5.
What more could you ask for?
Yep. Okay, remind me, is this on a 5-star scale?
It's on a 5-star scale. We use the letterboxed vibes where you can do half stars.
Oh, we need the half stars. We really need the half stars.
Goodreads doesn't give half stars.
I was just
going
to say.
It drives me crazy.
I give every book 4 stars. It's I finished it and I liked it.
Do you have any idea how many books that I've read that are 3.5 stars? So many.
Yeah. Yes. So many.
The difference between a 4 and a 5 is like insurmountable.
A 3 and a 4.
A 3 and a 4 and a 5. Those are huge gaps.
Yeah.
Huge gaps.
Yeah. Half is necessary.
Mm-hmm. It's very necessary. Yeah. So I will also hold hands with all of you. I will be the little leopard that you raise. I am baby. And
she is baby.
I am baby. I'm baby. I'm baby at 3.5 for all the reasons that you have just listed.
Gorgeous.
Yes. Like the historic value of it being the first mention of the word gay. And yeah, how they're bisexuals starring together in this movie.
Crazy.
Like that's crazy. And I think like for this time period, that's quite gay. Like you could not be doing a lot of gay stuff here.
Mm-hmm. No.
So this is big. This is big, y'all.
Is there nothing better than like purposefully sneaking around the Hays Code? Like that is that in of itself, I think is actually gay. Like going around the Hays Code, that's gay.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like legit though.
No, I know.
Kind
that,
of the
I,
whole point.
I know. I that's what I'm saying. Like literally going around it is gay. Like that's awesome.
It makes a big difference. Oh man. Oh my gosh. What a great movie.
Woo.
I'm so happy.
Woo! I'm bringing baby back. Yeah.
Interesting. Once again, the podcast has ended.
Nobody
this was so nice.
Ever take it seriously ever again. It's crazy that this is what we do. For our jobs.
I wish I did this for a job. You couldn't get paid like,
for exposure. Mia, you're the fucking best. Thank you so much for being
you
here.
You guys are. Thank you for having me. It's so fun. I love talking with y'all. I love this. Thank you.
Talking to you too. What are you up to at the moment? Where can people find you? What do you want to talk about? Give us the rundown.
Ooh, okay. Well, award season is over officially, so my life is a lot more chill, but I am still often writing for Letterboxd's online magazine Journal. You will see that when you log into the site. There's a little tab that says Journal. We write, you guys. We write articles. We do interviews, but we also write about films of your?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of your.
Yeah, and of your. Films of your. So, for example, you know, about a month ago, I wrote this article about the impact of the movie Gilda, 1946, by Charles Vidor. That is also a secretly bisexual film.
Yes. It is. It's on our list.
In a major way, yes. So please check out our journalism. That is what I'm very, very, very proud of all the work that we do on the editorial team at Letterboxd. And I would love for people to read our articles. And, of course, keep watching our freaking 4 faves videos, please. I love doing that stuff. That's me. Thank you again for having me. Woohoo!
Always.
May I say, your nails have never looked better.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Every
for those
time
listening.
I see a 4 faves, I'm like, what's Mia? What's Mia got on today?
I finally found my perfect recipe. This will be how I sign off. It is black nail polish with red glitter on top. So you got that black base with the red that shines. It is Vampire Queen vibes all the way for me.
There,
I've given away my formula. Go, everybody, take it.
Yes,
let's get it trending.
Huge fan of the Letterboxd editorials. I have started reading them basically every time I log a film because y'all are churning them out. So nice to be able to go down and be like, wow, what a great movie. And like, because scrolling through Letterboxd reviews is the most fun. And that like for it also to be accompanied most of the time by an editorial, it rocks.
The best.
I love how it works.
Thank you. That really means a lot to us. Like we put in so much effort. We're a tiny team. I don't know if people know that, but there are fewer than 20 full-time employees at Letterboxd.
Wow.
And like, yeah. So the editorial team is like, it's very, very small. So that means a lot that you are reading what we write. Thank you.
Always. We're also on the internet wherever you can care to track us down. I'm at Brooke B. Solomon.
Jordan H. Gus.
And we're together at Queer Quadrant. That goes for Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd. And you can find this podcast on Spotify, on Apple, anywhere else you get your pods. Drop us a rate. 5.
Intercostal singing. Clavicles only.
Oh, very nice. Drop us a review. Tell us about your leopard story or how much you love these the bisexual days of yore. And you can subscribe and also hit us up. Find us and tell us what you want to see us cover in the future.
Okay, before we get there, I have one last question. Was the leopard the same leopard acting, or do you think it was two? Oh, it is? Okay.
Yeah.
Oscar they were doing a Parent Trap.
Oscar nom parent when? Trapping. Literally, I know.
Yeah,
Oscar
snubbed.
Nom.
Snubbed.
Yeah. 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 One leopard, I think, was enough for Seth. But yeah, it's the same leopard.
Slay. She killed Slay. It.
Good
Anyways.
For her. Her name is Nisa, I think.
Nisa?
We love you, Nisa. This like, episode you, is dedicated
Oscar
to
Oscar Namisa.
Oscar nom Nisa and Skippy.
She should have won the Palm Dog.
Yeah.
She
didn't exist, but she should have won.
It didn't exist, but she should have won.
But what are we covering next, Brooke?
2 weeks from today, we will be back for a Rocket and Rollin musical. We're talking Hairspray.
Yeah.
2 weeks from today.
Woo! Yes! You can't stop the beat.
I'm so excited. I don't think anybody is ready because this is a movie that I did watch on repeat when I was young.
The energy is going to be a little unhinged on that one.
Energy is going to be through the roof. But we set it up well.
Right, right. We're teed it off, yeah.
Yes, yeah.
Corny Collins, let's go.
You can tune in.
Corny Collins,
truly the love of my life.
Love of my life, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you can tune in 2 weeks from now for that.
And is there anything you would like to leave our babies with?
Now see here, David.
Susan.
There we go.
Baby.
Baby.